Fat line messages from Hyperion came frequently the next year, but they were all negative. The nature and source of the anti-entropic fields had not been found. No unusual time-tide activity had been measured around the Sphinx. Experiments with laboratory animals in and around the tidal regions had resulted in sudden death for some animals, but the Merlin sickness had not been replicated. Melio ended every message with, "My love to Rachel." Saul and Sarai used money loaned from Rijks University to receive limited Poulsen treatments in Basard City. They were already too old for the process to extend their lives for another century, but it restored the look of a couple approaching 50 standard rather than 70. They studied old family photos and found that it was not too difficult to dress the way they had a decade and a half before. 16-year-old Rachel tripped down the stairs with her comlog tuned to the college radio station. "Can I have rice cereal?" "Don't you have it every morning?" smiled Saray. "Yes," grinned Rachel. "I just thought we might be out or something. I heard the phone. Was that Nikki?"
"No," said Saul.
"Damn," said Rachel and glanced at them.
"Sorry, but she promised she'd call as soon as the standardized scores came in. 3 weeks since tutorials. You'd think I'd have heard something."
"Don't worry," said Saray. She brought the coffee pot to the table, started to pour Rachel a cup, poured it for herself. "Don't worry, honey. I promise you that your scores will be good enough to get you into any school you want."
"Mom," sighed Rachel, "you don't know. It's a dog-eat-dog world out there."
She frowned.
"Have you seen my math Ansible? My room was all messed around. I couldn't find anything."
Saul cleared his throat. "No classes today, kiddo."
Rachel stared.
"No classes? On a Tuesday? 6 weeks from graduation? What's up?"
"You've been sick," Saray said firmly. "You can stay home one day. Just today."
Rachel's frown deepened.
"Sick? I don't feel sick. Just sort of weird. Like things aren't right, somehow. Like, why is the couch moved around in the media room? And where's Chips? I called and called, but he didn't come."
Saul touched his daughter's wrist. "You've been sick for a while," he said. "The doctor said you might wake up with a few gaps. Let's talk while we walk over to the campus. Want to?"
Rachel brightened. "Skip classes and go to the college? Sure."
She faked a look of consternation. "As long as we don't run into Roger Sherman. He's taking freshman calculus up there, and he's such a pain."
"We won't see Roger," said Saul. "Ready to go?"
"Almost." Rachel leaned over and gave her mother a huge hug.
"Later, alligator."
"Wild crocodile," said Saray.
"Okay," grinned Rachel, her long hair bouncing. "I'm ready."
The constant trips to Basard City had required the purchase of an EMV, and on a cool day in autumn, Saul took the slowest route, far below the traffic lanes, enjoying the sight and smell of the harvested fields below. More than a few men and women working in the fields waved to him. Basard had grown impressively since Saul's childhood, but the synagogue was still there on the edge of one of the oldest neighborhoods in the city. The temple was old. Saul felt old. Even the yarmulke he put on as he entered seemed ancient, worn thin by decades of use. But the rabbi was young. Saul realized that the man was at least 40. His hair was thinning on either side of the dark skullcap, but to Saul's eyes, he was little more than a boy. Saul was relieved when the younger man suggested that they finish their conversation in the park across the street. They sat on a park bench. Saul was surprised to find himself still carrying the yarmulke, passing the cloth from hand to hand. The day smelled of burning leaves and the previous night's rain.
"I don't quite understand, M. Weintraub," said the rabbi. "Is it the dream you're disturbed about,
or the fact that your daughter has become ill since you began the dream. Saul raised his head to feel the sunlight on his face. Neither, exactly, he said. I just can't help but feel that the two are connected somehow. The rabbi ran a finger over his lower lip. How old is your daughter? 13, said Saul, after an imperceptible pause. And is the illness serious, life-threatening? Not life-threatening, said Saul, not yet. The rabbi folded his arms across an ample belly. You don't believe... may I call you Saul? Of course. Saul, you don't believe that by having this dream, that somehow you've caused your little girl's illness, do you? No, said Saul, and sat a moment, wondering deep within if he was telling the truth. No, Rabbi, I don't think... Call me Mort, Saul. All right, Mort. I didn't come because I believe that I, or the dream, am causing Rachel's illness. But I believe my subconscious might be trying to tell me something. Mort rocked back and forth slightly. Perhaps a neurospecialist or psychologist could help you more there, Saul. I'm not sure what I'm interested in the story of Abraham, interrupted Saul. I mean, I've had some experience with different ethical systems, but it's hard for me to understand one which began with the order to a father to slay his son. No, 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 cried the rabbi, waving oddly childlike fingers in front of him. When the time came, God stayed Abraham's hand. He would not have allowed a human sacrifice in his name. It was the obedience to the will of the Lord that... Yes, said Saul, obedience. But it says, Then Abraham put forth his hand and took the knife to slay his son. God must have looked into his soul and seen that Abraham was ready to slay Isaac. A mere show of obedience without inner commitment would not have appeased the God of Genesis. What would have happened if Abraham had loved his son more than he loved God?